always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, making the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello and welcome to a brand new edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast. My name is Lawrence Donegan, and in this special edition of the show over the holiday season, we are going to look ahead to the 2024 season in golf, year in golf. Jeff Shackelford. Jeff, how are you? How was your Christmas?
It was great. Yeah, and 2023 was fantastic, I thought, but we really don't want to look back on it, do we?
No, I don't know. Actually, give me one.
Selfishly, it's fantastic.
Well. Give me one highlight from 2023, and then we'll leave it at that. Go on.
Have you got something? Well, you know, I'm working on a piece, and it's going very slowly over the holidays for my newsletter on the setups of last year. I went back to the people who do the setup, and I just forgot how many kind of unknown potential disasters were out there this year in terms of the venues, and they all really got through pretty well. I mean, there are the gripes about the crowds at LA and this and that. But, you know, overall, they held up really well. And so anyway, it was fun to reflect on that. I felt like that was a nice thing to reflect on instead of all the greed. And so I'm slowly getting through that piece, and I need to get it done before the year ends, I guess. Yeah. But so I would say, you know, I thought the venues really, I mean, Oak Hill was a star, and the new 13th at Augusta was a nothing burger in terms of based on the, I forgot how much the players early in the week declared at the end of golf as we know it, and no one will be ever get there in two, blah, blah, blah. And of course that didn't happen. That happens every major, you know, when you think about it, the players declare things and they're totally wrong at the end, by the end of the week.
Who would have thought?
No, anyway.
I was going to say, who would have thunk it that players would look at the things from their own perspective and
nobody else? Yeah, so. And then the Walker Cup was this. I think the Walker Cup was the event of the year in terms of everything coming together, the quality of the play. Maybe the expectations were a little low because the teams weren't maybe as stacked, as the kids like to say, as we would have maybe thought or compared to past Walker Cup teams. But the course, the setup, the weather, the atmosphere, the way it was conducted by the RNA, and then again the quality of the play, the whole thing, match play on the old course. I thought that was the event of the year. But the Ryder Cup was a pleasant surprise, and Marco Simone and how well it played. So, in fact, I mean, think about it. People were calling for it to get another one immediately. Who would have thought that going into the year?
I'm going to say, well, the Ryder Cup's a pretty obvious one. And the other thing, I think the emergence of Ludvig Åberg was quite something. Haven't tracked him since the Carmel Cup of 2019, which was an event run by Vanderbilt at Pebble Beach. Some muckety-muck at Vanderbilt runs this event every year, Jeff, at Pebble Beach. It ships out eight teams and puts them up at the lodge, and they put on a really good event there in February. It's really it's a women's event this year. Earlier this year. So Åberg, I actually showed up to watch Sandy Scott, who was playing for Texas Tech at the time, and lo and behold, who's there but Ludvig. It was just something, a sight to behold. So it's great to see him come through. We'll come on to 2024, but that's one of my, I've got a pin in that one. I want to see how he does this year in majors especially. His first major. We will get to that though, Jeff. So the purpose of the show, we are not going to, I did think about doing a 3-hour podcast on the origin story of McKellar Golf Podcast, but I think we'll make, give that one a miss. I think somebody's already done that one. So 2024, we are going to look ahead to 2024. I mean, it's a toss up, Jeff. I didn't know whether to start with the golf or with the business of golf. I think we should probably go with the business of golf. I think you've got some news to break on this. Didn't you tell me something the other day? But the deadline, the talks between the PIF and the PGA Tour and whoever else is in the mix, I think it was meant to be 31st of December. I think it's going the same way as your piece on the setups of the major championships. Might miss a deadline.
No, I've got a better chance to finish mine. But I've heard from the European side of things that the folks there have been notified that it's already been extended. So don't expect a year-end New Year's Eve celebration over a few billion PIF dollars landing in the tour coffers or tours coffers. So that's not a big surprise, is it?
No, but I'm surprised that it hasn't. You know, when you told me that, I thought, well, I must go. That must have been reported somewhere, but evidently not. I guess it's not deemed to be important enough. I guess the tours or whoever thought that they'd laid the table out in that and prepared everybody for that. So the negotiations continue. However, Jeff, the negotiations have to come to an end at some point, in which case then we'll know what, not certainly not 2024, but certainly 2025 and beyond, what professional golf will look like. Actually, I'll tell you one thing. Let's start here. What about the leadership of certainly the PGA Tour going ahead? There's been lots and lots of stuff, and we've talked about it. Everybody's talked about it. I got somebody who would be in a position to know, like a very serious heavy hitter, was suggesting that Jay Monahan is in fact kind of gone. It's not a case of if, it's when. The problem being right now, which would tie into something that was a report in the New York Times about 2 or 3 months ago, that Adam Silver of the NBA had been offered a job, turned it down. But anyway, the problem right now with the leadership of the PGA Tour is they can't actually find anybody to replace of sufficient caliber and stature to replace Jay Monahan. But Monahan will be gone. That's a pretty safe prediction, isn't it, Jeff?
So are you making the prediction, or are you just kind of lightly throwing this out? Okay.
No, I am. Yeah. Well, hey.
Well, no, I posed the question, who breaks up first, Jay and the board or Travis and Taylor? And, you know, I think we need to really pin this down timing-wise. I don't think it's a huge shock that there's a good chance he's going to be fired. So
yeah. Well, I don't know firing, but yeah, it's not. I think it's my suggestion. My prediction is he won't be there, but my suggestion is my sort of God. I wouldn't glorify it with the description sources, but the suggestion to me is that he is already gone in all but name. That the problem is who do they get? As for Travis and Taylor, I think they're going all the way to the. The altar. I'm all in on Travis. Yeah, it's
wonderful. Wow. Well, I don't know. I was just reading the opposite in Us Weekly or one of those, The Globe. Yeah, at the market line. Well, I'm going to make my prediction and say, yes, I agree. He will be gone. He'll be moved to a job at Fenway or selling Titleist golf balls, because he certainly is a great salesman for them. And I think they'll try to give him, because if you look at this situation, you have to have you certainly have to assess that he's done a horrible job in a lot of ways, but you also have to have some empathy with the people he's reporting to and the way the players have sort of overtaken things. And I could see the business side saying, we'll slip you in here in a job at Fenway and make the transition. But to your point, yeah, the replacement situation is tricky. And I would watch for an interim commissioner like Tiger Woods to take the job for a while this summer until they find somebody. I think something wild like that will happen.
Really? I am flabbergasted by that. I've got a couple of suggestions. We've spoken about Mike Wan before. I think he would be a fantastic commissioner of the PGA Tour. He did brilliantly through the rollout of the rollback. I thought he handled that beautifully. He did a great job as a commissioner of the LPGA Tour. A very accomplished media performer, very calm, under pressure. I'm guessing he has long experience with the kind of money men that the PGA Tour will be dealing with in the future. I have no idea how he got on with the Saudis, but you know, if Yasser gets what he wants, then I think he would be quite happy to put up with Mike Wan. The other suggestion I have is what about Keith Pelley, who I think is North American from Canada. I think he's done a pretty good job in tricky circumstances of steering the PGA Tour, the European Tour, DP World Tour for the last few years. There's also, if Pelley was to jump to the PGA Tour as a very ready-made replacement for him at the European Tour, and Guy Kinnings, who was responsible for running the Ryder Cup stuff last year, did a... Luke Donald gets a lot of praise, rightly so, for his captaincy, but I think Guy Kinnings and his team running the Ryder Cup did a superb job. I got the venue dead right. The whole organization was pretty good. I mean, running an event of that scale in Italy and pulling it off is quite something if you've ever seen the traffic flows in Rome. So that would be my other suggestion. Mike Wann or Keith Pelly. How about Pelly for you? Are you impressed by him?
I think it's a great call. He certainly has done business with the public investment fund. He brought them into this whole mess to begin with. So maybe somebody will say, "Yeah, it's his job to deal with them." And I think I don't sense any of these people are really thinking about the golf part of the job. It's all about the business side. So I would think that's a fantastic prediction. I actually wonder about Mike Wann's level of interest in the job. Just going by his tone during the distance rollout, I felt like it was a bit of exhaustion with the way that the folks on the opposition side behaved in not really respecting the process. So, and I think the players are going to want a yes man, and I actually think that's why you and I might find Mike Wann to be an attractive candidate, because he's not necessarily that. That he would do what's best for the sponsors and the business side at the risk of sometimes offending the players. So I think that will be a big part of the job. And I we'll get into it, but my prediction is that I don't think that he will fit the role for them because of what they're looking for, and the players are in charge now, and I think they're going to want somebody who says, yeah, you guys do the run the golf part and leave the business side to somebody else. And I think you're making a mistake taking that job if you don't have full control over all portions of the operation, because I just don't think the players can be trusted to make very good decisions, thinking either of the entire group of players or thinking big picture, long term, all that stuff. I just don't think they're very good at it.
Do you think Patrick Cantlay and Tiger Woods would stomach Keith Pelly? I'm sure they know him. They've probably dealt with him in a peripheral sense over the years. He's he seems very much like a player's not commissioner, CEO in Europe. I think he's pretty well respected and very well liked. I'm sure these are skills that you can transfer over to the United States. We'll leave that. Keith Pelly would would be quite good. Although whoever takes the job has some serious problems. There's no question about that. We had Josh Carpenter on from Sports Business Journal a couple of weeks back, talking about Wells Fargo departing its sponsorship of the event at Quail Hollow. Quite an astonishing loss. A long-term sponsor, great sponsor, synonymous with that event. I just wonder how many others might go. Again, I heard it kicking around in the ether that at least one other sponsor was approached and asked to double their contribution to the event that they stage. I want no names, no pack drill, and essentially told the PGA Tour to get lost. They were quite happy with the amount of money that they throw at their particular event, and they're no interest in doubling that sum. So I'm guessing that will be the message that, you can, maybe the PGA Tour thinks it can afford to let Wells Fargo walk away, but if you have three or four major sponsors refusing to pony up vast sums of money on top of the vast sums of money that they already pony up, then that's a real problem. Another great one, Jeff, sorry. I'm wittering on here.
Are we doing predictions or gossip?
No. Well, here's another great bit of gossip. The other, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am has been revamped this year. I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think the amateurs get to play less golf.
Right.
I believe they're being asked. I heard tale of one amateur was asked to I think I'm trying to, was to 8x is that's how much it was going to cost. I think there's 25,000 to play. Anyway, I think that
somewhere
that number,
yeah, maybe closer to 30 now, but yeah,
is it?
But,
well, yeah, that number has been increased by, you know, times eight, up to 100. Sorry, that's not right.
No, times four.
Times four. Anyway, in excess of 100,000 are these guys have been asked to. That would be their fee for playing in the AT&T Pro-Am. And I think there's been a severe pushback on that, the tour. So that's another issue. But all sorts of money issues. Anyway, I hope Keith Pelley enjoys his new job. But he's not got his problems to seek. The other thing, Jeff, again, nobody knows. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, are we doing so? Can I? I'm happy to make a prediction while you dance around these things. I'm going to predict the PGA Tour will get its private equity money. It will get its Saudi money, and in the process, they will run off several huge sponsors, I believe. I'm starting to wonder if it's intentional. I almost wonder if they want to go to a for-profit model, and the way to possibly do that is to kill a few events off, and because I really can't figure out how you go to these people and ask them to double what they're paying based on the numbers. But maybe they're just that delusional. I don't know, but I think they'll lose several big sponsors, and by the end of 2024, the tour will start transitioning to a for-profit entity entirely. I think part of the deal will be with all this money that they're getting was going to invest in properties. I think they were going to buy things, and that might put that on hold. But I think for 2025, I'll be predicting they'll be buying. Are attempting to buy Pebble Beach, PGA National, and Riviera, because I remember these people want to invest in something tangible, and I think properties have always been part of this equation. And of course, this money will now own the TPC network and other things like that. So that's kind of, I think it will, they'll get their money, and they'll it will commence the beginning of the end of the nonprofit model.
Yeah. I guess my prediction on all of this is, I mean, we'll be announced in 2024, won't take effect until 2025. I think there might be something in that the PGA Tour, I'm sure they're not chasing away sponsors, but I don't think they'll mind as much as people might think if there are fewer events, because I think the goal, my hunch is that the goal is a slimmed down tour of 20 core events through the year, through the prime golf season, 20 elevated events, if you like, and then add on to that. I'd be interested to see where the Saudis get their pound of flesh. I suspect that they might, there might be, again, this goes back to the famous meeting in 2019 with Egon Durban and Phil went to the PGA Tour and tried to buy the fall season. I think there might be something in that. You know, you have a core PGA Tour season of 20 events, and then you have a fall into, you know, early, you know, winter season of maybe 6 to 8 events, which might be something like an Aramco series. So you would have two separate tours run under the same umbrella. Then you add in the majors. Now you're up to 32, 34 events. And then you take it from there. That's what my, again, based on absolutely nothing.
Just your prediction.
That's just my prediction. I think that's the way it'll go. And I think that players will then be able to, from players from LIV, players from the PGA Tour, certainly the upper echelon players will be able to take their pick. I don't think that's apart from the idea that it's very US-centric, I would hope that they would go more around the world. But I don't think that will be the case. We'll see.
It's a lot of golf to play for a top player.
Yeah.
And I realize I've made the mistake of claiming some of these things are mandatory, but let's face it, with the money we're talking about, it may not be mandatory in writing, but it will be mandatory in spirit. Yeah. I just don't see how they can do all this stuff and not demand some participation in some way for certain, at least for players who are ranked, maybe not Tiger and a few other old farts, but that's a good prediction. I think that's and that's for 20 that will be shaped for 2025 in 2024, just to be okay.
Again, this might be his 2024 predictions, but below what's of interest to me is what happens below that top level. That will be quite a mess, and how the whole promotion and relegation system works. That's going to take a lot of work, but we'll see. The four majors, Jeff, your bread and butter next year. We've got the Masters. Then we have the PGA at Valhalla. Then we have the US Open at Pinehurst, number two. And finally, the Open Championship at Royal Troon. What do you think of those venues for the year? Are you a big fan of those? Do you think that's a stellar lineup or a decent lineup?
Stellar's a little strong. Well, I don't mind Valhalla because it produces great finishes.
You're right.
So I root for the exciting tournament, and I think it will be a great time of year to be there as well. It won't be as hot as it was in August, and it's kind of right after the this year it'll be after the 150th Kentucky Derby. So it will be, but there will still be a lot of excitement around it, and so I think that'll be good. Pinehurst just does it. I did not enjoy it last time. I really didn't think the fans had a good time, and so it sounds like they've made some adjustments to get people closer to the action. And that was before LA Country Club. That was the plan they learned from last time. I hope they have a water truck and it's not as dusty. But it's not my favorite courses because I feel like a few of the greens are just in my favorite course in the U.S. Open. I love Pinehurst number two, but in a U.S. Open, some of those greens are a little bit much. So we'll see how they present it, and I think they'll be careful, and it'll be fine. It'll be a good solid course. I guess I'm less excited because it's the first of three within 9 years, which I think is really poor. Poor scheduling, because we've seen it. We know when a place has been away a little while and you come back, there's an excitement, and those and the third one will be a joint back to back with the women, and that's good. But so that's that. And then Troon, we know it was a spectacular duel last time, so it could be set up for another good one, but. My prediction for the year, Lawrence, will be that Victor Hovland's going to win two majors, and Rory McIlroy is going to win one. Don't ask me which ones. I'm just telling you. and the fourth winner is just going to be a shocker. We are really, really overdue for a John Daly 95, a Ben Curtis 2003, a Todd Hamilton who won at Troon. So I think we're really due for one of the. I don't count Brian Harman or Wyndham Clark as that on that level of shocker as I'm talking about. I'm talking about somebody who is in the high 100s or almost pushing 200 in the world kind of thing. It just feels like we're due for one of those.
I don't see that at all, actually. No? I just think the very best players are really separating themselves.
That's true.
And there's just too many of them. You know, you might be able to sneak past two or three, but my goodness, at that top level now you're looking at 10 to 12 guys that are really pretty special, and for somebody to come out of nowhere and run past all 12 of those, 12 or 15 of those, I think that's well nigh impossible these days. I think Troon is. I'm trying to go through the list of winners at Troon. Kalkavecchia, Todd Hamilton, Justin Leonard. Was there one between Todd Hamilton and Henrik Stenson? I'm trying to think. It doesn't matter. Anyway, no. I think it's there wasn't. I think I mean, I know Todd, you know, Kalkavecchia snuck in, but you know, he snuck past Rahman at the end. You have the Stenson Mickelson one was obviously a great one. Justin Leonard was a justifiable winner at the time, so I think it's produced pretty good winners. Actually produced the best winner's speech as well. Was in Justin Leonard's was a great
that was a good one.
Really,
yeah.
yeah, beautiful speech. Yeah, it's a. I think what puts people off is just the constant coming and going of planes from Prestwick Airport pisses people off. But it's a great part of the world to have an open championship. Some wonderful golf courses around here. I think it'll produce a good winner. I think we are at the stage now, Jeff, where major championships are just tailored to the very best players. I really do. I'm not sure. Will Hovland win two majors? That would be quite something. Again, I think it's going to be harder and harder now for guys to win a cut two out of four, such as the standard. The other thing as well is the LIV guy. If you look at the Masters from last year, the majors from last year, the LIV guys came in and just seemed their schedules were just better. So certainly in terms of getting lighter. prepared for and getting prepared for major championships. You would love to predict that Rory McIlroy would win the Masters finally, but there's a bunch of guys. You know, John Rahm will be coming back into that. He's already won there, obviously. Well, depends what Rory's schedule is. His toys are well and truly out of the pram right now. So I think he may just do whatever he wants.
And I think that will be fun to see. I mean, he's tried so many different ways to come into the Masters, and we'll find out if he goes all in and plays all these events, or now that he's off the board, he's just going to say, sorry, guys, the Bay Hill is just not a good thing for my game a few weeks out before the Masters, or heaven forbid I say this, he skips the Players. But I feel like he's going to be a very interesting kind of rogue character in 2023, and I love it. I think it's great. He put in his time, he tried, and now he's just going to, I really do believe it sounds like he's just going to be focused on winning, and he's going to play some odd places that maybe we wouldn't have expected. He's just going to do what he wants to do. And I think, I think it would be great to see him win the Masters, but I think Hovland's going to be really tough there, just the way his game is. And I assume he's going to continue the momentum into 2024. It just seems inevitable, but I guess you're right. You know, there is a group there: Scheffler, Hovland, McIlroy, Rahm. I mean, those four to me are just kind of on another level. But
well, you'd have to include Koepka in that group, wouldn't you?
I think so. And when it comes to the majors, I suppose, at least based on last year. So yeah, it's it feels like they should all be won by that group of players, assuming they stay healthy. But you have some new blood. We'll see what happens. Troon, by the way, Weisskopf and Watson also were winners in the modern era there, so that's nice. And Bobby Locke, of course, going way back, and Arnold Palmer, and so it's had good winners, other than the Hamilton shocker. And Valhalla has produced very good winners, and it's PGA. This will be its last PGA, I think. So at least for a while.
Todd Hamilton, Ernie Els should have won that. Ernie Els should have won that one in 2004. Yeah. Played great that week. What's your prediction for Ludwig then for the majors through the, as he's playing his first major in Augusta National? Hard to believe, really.
I think he'll have a great year. I don't know if he'll win one. I don't feel like he will, but you and Tron and a few others have been predicting this greatness from him, and it's happened. So I was surprised by the caddy switch. That's always an odd one. That was a year-end kind of Friday news dump situation, but that was strange, you know. But he has his—I guess he decided he wants somebody who has more experience with the venues. I really don't know. I didn't really buy any of the explanations.
I didn't either. He said Joe Scoffron, is that, I can't remember how he pronounced the guy's name. But more experience. Well, hang on, he hasn't won a major. He was a Ricky Fowler drag. He knows how to. You know, he's witnessed a lot of choking through the years.
That wasn't nice. Well,
that's not. But you know what I mean. it was an odd one. I felt sorry. I can't remember the guy's name. He's old caddy. I guess that guy had done a very good job, actually.
Yeah, I'd say.
I think that's pretty unfair. But what do I know? And I'm sure that guy was looking at the next 5-10 years of his life, thinking, "Oh my goodness, this is going to be so fantastic." A, financially, but B, to be witnessing greatness this close, up close, anyway, he is gone. Poor Tom Kim, I think he's scuffling around trying to get somebody as well. Oh,
he'll be fine.
I don't keep up with the caddy carousel.
No,
there you
no.
go. You're not predicting the winners of each individual major, Jeff. Are you going to have a go at that? No, you're not. That's beneath you.
I'll give it to you. I'll go Hovland, McIlroy at Valhalla. Let's see. I think the U.S. Open is where we'll get our shock winner. I don't know who it's going to be. And then I think Troon will be a Hovland McIlroy duel that ends up kind of a reboot of the Open in 2022 on Saturday, and those two do what Henrik and Phil did in 2016, and they break away from the field. And I'll give it to Hovland based on that. But I think it could go either way. I think that's one of the cool stories that Rory's become and it's a hard thing to bring up to him. Maybe I will, just because I don't care, and I know he won't take it the wrong way, because he probably is proud of it himself, the way Phil was proud of it, that he's gone from somebody who was not known as a good, firm, fast golf course type, to relishing that and being able to handle some things that are besides kind of a more green test. And you just look at what he's done at the Open, one of the firmest, fastest things anybody had ever seen at St. Andrews in 2022. LA North wasn't fiery, but it was a crispy type of course that 10 years ago he would not have played well on. So I think you have to admire that about his game and where he's come around on that kind of golf. And I hope we get those conditions throughout the year, because they generally prove who the best player is. And I also think Tiger will play all four majors. I really do. I think he's going to play once a month, like he said, and he's going to skip Bay Hill. He'll play the Players. He'll play the Genesis. He'll play all four, and he'll shut it down after after Troon. That'll be the end of the year for him.
Can I ask you to predict how many buddy photographs you'll see of Tiger and Rory together over the next 12 months?
I don't know. I don't sense they're texting as much after Rory left the board. It sounds like they don't see eye to eye on that. I'm sure they're still friendly, but I just don't think that they see eye to eye. I mean, Tiger is clearly taking the helm here to represent the sort of Americanization of the tour and letting the rest of the world fend for itself thing. And I think that's why Jon Rahm left. And it's just bizarre to me. Tiger viewed himself as a world player, but maybe he's just read the room and the forces are too strong. But I think it's a huge mistake to let that be the guiding vision. But that may just be money. That may not be Tiger's philosophy. We know his philosophy on a lot of things, and it certainly know how he feels about equipment and some other things. So it may just be that the money people are saying, you have to play in the U.S. The television networks are saying you have to play in the U.S. We want to fill those weekend hours like we always have. And you guys give the rest of the world to somebody else. So it just could be pure dollars and cents. And so that's kind of a tricky position he's in right now. And I'm surprised he wants to do it. But on the other hand, you know, he's a little older, and I think he may enjoy it as a challenge.
Just finally leaving the whole business side of thing, we're talking there about the private equity guys coming in. Jeff, you recommended this book to me a few months ago. I got it for a Christmas gift. Plunder by Brendan Ballou.
Wow, uplifting.
My goodness. Yeah. Private equity plan to pillage America. Yeah. Just an astonishing read.
It's brutal, you know, though. So, so depressing. It's so good, though. It's well done.
But with the amount of private equity coming into the PGA Tour, coming into professional golf, there is always these guys are not, charitable organizations. So you just kind of wonder where they are. Again, we go on about it repeatedly. Where is the return?
Well, and if you didn't ask me that question, by the way, I had a prediction on that.
Oh, go on then. What was the question I wanted to ask you? What was it about?
Well, what's going to be the biggest media news story of the year?
Oh,
And
right. Well,
I,
the, well,
yeah.
I, yeah. Well, yeah.
And
Okay.
I'm
Well, can it?
predicting that
Go
that
on.
part, a big part of that enterprise's operation that they're going to have, that they're investing in, is going to be purchasing the Golf Channel off the trash heap from Comcast, and that it will become PGA Tour TV, and maybe they'll even get a decent streaming app at some point. But and then they'll the private equity guys will figure out that clever way where they take their fees, and then they also renegotiate the media deal, and the enterprises is paying money to the tour,
Oh my
and
God.
they pull that whole little whatever they do, and they will own the channel, and that'll be one of the things that these people have invested their money in as a ta which because they have to have some tangible things that you can put your hands on, and I think golf course properties and a network will be those things. And of course, it's going to be a wild year on the media front. So we'll see if CBS and Paramount merge, that will influence some of this. Excuse me, CBS and Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery. Let me get that right. Which entails CBS possibly being a partner with TNT, TBS on the television side, and Paramount Plus, of course, with Max. So, yeah, that's going to have a say in this because David Zaslav is a golf person, and CBS really does still value that contract, and so. It's going to be a wild, wild year on that front, but Golf Channel is separate from all that, and I think that that's going to be in the hands of the PGA Tour by the end of the year.
I finally came across Golf Pass. I was staying in an Airbnb in Miami a
Oh.
couple of weeks ago, and it was part of the package. My goodness, it was Martin Hall and Ro Laura Davis on constant loop. It was on a constant loop for hours and hours. I love both of them, but my goodness,
Did you watch
I
any
just
Rory instruction pieces?
I did not.
'Cause he's a
No, I
Golf
wasn't.
Pass guy, or I
Yeah.
think he still is. Yeah.
Just what a disastrous enterprise that really was.
Did you drive up the coast to see the SoFi dome and see how the collapse is coming along? The SoFi TGL.
I did not. I did
What do you think's
not.
going to happen to the TGL in 2024? There's one for you. I bet you
Well,
haven't given any thought to, for good reason.
I think it isn't it in it's in suspension, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you have to wonder. Again, come January 2025, will it still be viable? Will people have time? Will it fit into any kind of schedule? Which is, I think, is a shame because I was quite looking forward to it. I have no idea if it would have worked or not, but it would have been something different. And I like the idea of a 2-hour, golf show, with actual golf, competitive golf in it. So it's, if it doesn't emerge in 2025, I think that would be a real shame. But
I'm
there you
going to
go.
counter that with a much more optimistic take. I think, well, not optimistic, but I think it will return, and I think the franchises within the TGL will become PGA Tour franchises, and that will be something that develops in 2024, and then by 25 or 6, that will actually become a reality, that there will be franchises with players, and they will adopt the live model that was conceived by Andy Gardner.
I just maybe that will be my second port, my Aramco series idea. That might be the team series. If you have 20
Bleak.
PGA Tour events, yeah, bleak. Anyway, we will. But so are we having PGA Tour buys the Golf Channel for the next incarnation of the PGA Tour buys the Golf Channel. Any other predictions on other than the and golf media, just other than the further demise of traditional ways of covering golf,
Ugh.
I mean, God bless the guys who are still covering golf on the beat, but my goodness, it can't be long before that's over. I guess, I mean, you do hear, I mean, I think you spoke to me about it, the podcasting advertising space is really struggling just now, isn't it? Didn't you mention
Seems
that
to
to me
be,
the other
yeah.
day?
Several people
Yeah.
have been discussing that on their various pods. Leo Laporte, who I listen to a lot, the Twit Network, is seeing a massive decline. And it's just the combination of, well, it really, it comes down to metrics and being able to share. And Spotify, as unsuccessful as their podcasting foray under the guidance of Bill Simmons has been, because they just badly overpaid for some people. What they can do is deliver to advertisers more concrete numbers on who is paying attention. And that's so the combination of that and then YouTube being able to do similar stuff has made, and there's just been so many podcasts that I think it's pretty obvious what's happened is that the market's just kind of been flooded, and there are things that advertisers can go to with more concrete demographics. At least that's how Leo's portrayed it, and a few others that I've read about. So it's a big story, because that's really how the game is covered now. When you think about it, sure, we have writers still, and they're still breaking stories, and friends of the pod on both sides of the Atlantic are still doing a great job, but there's so few of them. And there's so little opinion writing. I mean, think about it. Gosh, what do we have? Eamon at Golf Week is really the only true opinion columnist for a major U.S. publication. I obviously do my rants now and then on Substack, but Golf Digest doesn't really have columnists anymore. Golf.com's, you know, does a lot of sponsored content and no real columnists. So yeah, it's podcasts are have been the one place where the game has still been covered with a little bit of an edge. So obviously, I hope that doesn't get eaten into, because we know it's important to have that commentary and that fodder surrounding the game. But it's kind of a profound thought when you think about it for writers like us, that is now the last medium for opinion and insight and occasional news breaking and then post tournament discussion. It's not television. It's not print as much, or internet.
And the level of coverage, although I really want to give a shout out, both of us were slightly concerned when we saw No Laying Up, we're going over to Titleist. But I think their coverage of the ball rollback, their coverage of the whole equipment space has been really, I mean, hesitate to use the word courageous.
It has been. It's directly courageous.
Yeah, directly in contravention of the Titleist rules.
Yeah.
Good on them. That was heartening, and it gave me a little bit of hope. But generally, the
sponsored content everywhere else is brutal.
I mean, the 40-year-old virgins at Foreplay, I mean, my goodness, these are just, I mean, prostitutes.
Oh, come on, they're going to be even bigger next year. They're Excel's favorite go-to media outlet, and Excel is essentially the main agency running the tour now. So strap in, Lawrence, you're going to get more of them next year.
Those guys are just awful. I fairly niche, but you gotta love Andy and Gar. Their content is
Shotgun Start and Friday Egg. Yes, so we,
just
for those
wonderful.
Who, yeah, they're
really
they're,
good.
Doing a great job, and yeah, we still have people doing a great job for sure, and of course, and we still have Corgan at the Telegraph, and we have Bob Herrig at Sports Illustrated, and Ewan Murray. We still have some people breaking news and doing classic reporting. Doug Ferguson at the AP. But I do worry about what AI is going to do. And, you know, the various organizations have already carved out kind of their own media coverage, I guess, in anticipation of this, or just seeing that where things were going. But the advertisers, I don't think, are too enthralled with the various golf publications, and that's a bummer. It's a shame.
What do you think will happen? Do you have a prediction in 2024 for a publication, say, like Golf Digest? I think you've been calling Time and Digest for a lot, you know, for quite a while. Do you think it'll still be around the 25? In its current form?
Yeah, I mean, look, they survived this year. They're still printing, so I was amazed that there's still a print issue. It's like a little, it's very thin, but it's there. So I think they'll hang in there. They're just a rounding error for Warner Brothers Discovery, and Zaslav has shown he likes golf, so he'll keep it afloat. And if they end up merging with Paramount, it'll become part of the sport. He's got a real desire to build out a sports operation, so I think that will be part of that side of golf if they stay in golf. I'm just going to be fascinated by what all these media companies do with golf, if these people have will price themselves out of things. I say these people, the tour players. And then Lawrence, the thing that I we can't put a prediction on that, but you're hearing it, I'm hearing it, is how disgusted people are with these guys and with the players. And I just don't think they've factored in that people have other options to go watch and do things and other sports. Of course there's this danger as well in some other areas like college athletics right now with college football and the Pac-12's demise and how many people are annoyed by those kinds of things and the NILs. But the pro golfers have really positioned themselves poorly, and that's where, not having a strong commissioner to do a lot of taking a lot of the heat out front has just put the players out front talking about things they shouldn't be talking about with people and their plight with money and all that. I think it's just turned off so many people, and then you factor in all the years of kind of the oversaturation of the dreaded product has really caught up to them. And I think you're going to see a ratings decline, but I don't know how else you measure that other than, ratings or who the athletes are on the Forbes list, those kinds of things where you see who the go-tos are. But I just don't think these players understand how much people are kind of bored with them. The game is remaining healthy in spite of them. I think with the economy having survived a recession, we think that's just that the recreational game's going to continue to do well. I mean, I just saw the rounds played numbers for November, and I realize that's not a prime month. They were up 8-10%, incredible.
Wow.
And again, there's weather stuff, but the point is they didn't take a decline, a big drop. And I think you're going to see the combination of the recreational game remaining popular and the pros being seen as DBs as a cause for further ratings decline and the oversaturation stuff. So I think the majors will be the big audiences of the year, and the rest will take a little bit of a hit.
So who benefits out of that? What are your predictions? DBs. I'm taking you mean
Yes, I was
douchebags.
trying to keep it,
Right.
it's the
Yeah,
holiday
okay.
season. Just trying to keep
Right,
it
the holiday
classy.
season. Yeah. So if the PGA Tour becomes less popular or more unpopular, who benefits? My guess is the amateur game benefits, the college game benefits, the women's game benefits. I think.
Well, I would love to agree with you on that. I do think that I sense the amateur game will benefit the most because I just have heard that from enough people that either they've experienced one in person, college amateur event, or they've watched the US Amateur, they've watched the Walker Cup, the Curtis Cup, the Women's Amateur, whatever. They want to not watch pros. So those could be the beneficiaries. I'd love to say that college golf would be, but there are a lot of signs right now that the Golf Channel is about
Throwing
ready
out,
to
yeah.
throw in the towel on its college golf push, which I think is just shocking when you see that college golf is actually now the tour's minor leagues. It is producing people who step onto the tour and are ready to go. And so maybe the tour, if they get the Golf Channel, would rescue that element because they're so in on the PGA Tour University, and you've got to televise some of those events and continue to kind of build those players up and let us get to know them, and at least for the core fan, I think. But they just don't seem to value the core fan at the tour, and that's been the constant theme of the last five to well, really the Monahan era is it's just this wanting to market and get this imaginary fan that's not a fan now, and they've just thrown the core fan out just relentlessly. Every chance they get, they just don't care. They just think those people will be there no matter what. And I don't know about you, but I'm hearing just constantly from people who are what I'd call core fans. They're well off, they're successful, or they're younger, but they're going somewhere in life. They're the people you want as your core fan, and they feel alienated, or they feel forgotten about or disrespected. And just a total mystery to me where that mentality comes from, but that's been the Monahan era.
But if you're trying to grow the PGA Tour and tap into that younger demographic, you can't. And I mean, credit to the tour for growing the PGA Tour university stuff, but you have to promote it. You have to market that space in golf. Otherwise, you have guys dropping out of nowhere onto the PGA Tour. You know, nobody. So when Gordon Sargent takes up his PGA Tour card, people know who he is. They've seen him on TV. They've seen him, you know, on college events. You know, people knew about Ludwig before, just before Ludwig was turned pro. He was I can't remember which conference, the SEC or whatever. He was playing Prairie, winning the SEC at Prairie Dunes by 7 on the Golf Channel. It was just some of the best golf I've seen. I saw in 2023.
Yeah.
So you can't, on the one hand, you know, promote these younger players and PGA Tour University, and yet on the other, cut off any, you know, visibility for these same guys. It doesn't make any sense. So
no.
If what you're saying is right about the Golf Channel is basically going to abandon college golf in 2024. Or certainly coverage of it.
I think they're going to start winding then, down and being very selective.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that seems a very, again, it's not a, there's no logic to that, no marketing sense to that. It's not joined up thinking in any kind of way. Now, I do understand that there's a cost to covering college golf.
Yeah.
But I mean, the returns can't just simply be measured in dollars and cents. The returns can be measured in visibility, in marketing the product, making golf younger and more exciting. So I think, you look at, again, I have no idea, but the RNA broadcast, live broadcast on YouTube, the Amateur Championship, the coverage was fantastic. And the numbers are pretty, again, I have no idea. These numbers are probably piddling. But the final, I think the streaming numbers were up, and there was 10,000 people viewing that were on the stream that was going live. So I thought that was a pretty impressive number. And again, I'm sure the RNA lost an absolute fortune in its coverage. But they did it. They did it at the men's amateur. They did it at the women's amateur. There was quite a lot of good streaming coverage at the Walker Cup. It was obviously covered in the Golf Channel, a couple of two-hour shows a day or whatever it was. But really worthwhile and brought, you know, introduced a bigger audience or a wider audience to what's going on at the amateur level. Sorry, go on.
I don't know if it's a wider audience, but like I said, it's and I wider, that's WIDER. But it's a core audience, and again, it's like the Asia Pacific Amateur at Royal Melbourne.
Phenomenal.
You know, not huge numbers, but it was phenomenal. And then the core golfer that watches it mentions it to their friends who didn't see it, and then people who don't know the game as well see their enthusiasm. You know, those are the little things that marketing types tend to not understand. They just want these numbers. And they want to see them, and that's the only way they can judge. And we know in golf, it's a different sport in that you build from the core audience out. And we've gone through this. The more money that has to go to purses and top players, the less it goes to marketing, the less it goes to features on people that are done on a broadcast, the less it goes to investing in the broadcast, et cetera. It's just a disastrous direction. And that's could be the one positive of this infusion of money, that it does go to protecting kind of that ecosystem around the game. And there goes there's a dreaded B-speak word, but it is an ecosystem that tells us who's coming, tells us more about the people who are there, why we should want to watch them, or when there's some guy that comes out of nowhere. And, you know, like the great story at Tour School recently, not great, but touching story. You know, those stories are being told. You know, it's not a guarantee those stories get told. We're lucky to have Monday Q and people on the podcast side, it's not really, because it's not great when it comes from the official entities. It just, people want that. They don't want that sheen of propaganda, even if it's not propaganda, even if they just tell the story. It has that feeling, and that's something that the tour has, and all these organizations struggle with, is they don't necessarily value that impact of independent coverage, that they want to control it too much, and that just never works. So, but I'm glad they do it when they do it, because somebody's got to do some of this coverage, you know, the way the RNA and the USGA. Well, the RNA more than the USGA has really gotten into the open qualifying series and telling the stories of those people who are going to the final qualifying. The USGA was doing that, and they kind of got away from it, cost cutting. You know, to me, it's just a huge mistake. So anyway, that's but I think the tour's response would be, well, we have Netflix and we have season 2 of Full Swing coming.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. And one of my predictions for this year is this will be the last. This will be last year of Full Swing. This will be the last one.
Right. Really? Well, I've got one prediction that one show will be absolutely shit. It'll be the show about the Netflix Cup in Las Vegas.
Oh God. Please don't do that to us. Please don't recap that.
Yeah, I think we'll see that. So that'll be one episode we can write off. You haven't heard anything that is Tiger doing a show? They're going to do a show with Tiger. Think he'll give them.
I've heard very little on the details. I'm making the prediction based on more on the idea that these sort of sports documentaries, they flooded the zone with them, and they're not, there's a lack of an organic feeling to them and people want a little bit more of a story told. Obviously the F1 show's going strong, but I just think that the way they've gone about it, combined with the players needing to have control and then the players realizing it's a pain in the ass to have these crews tagging along with them, they're not getting paid. And I just think all those factors coming together, which we knew would be a problem at some point, are gonna kill it. And then I just don't know how much thirst people will have for watching the behind the scenes ruminations over the live stuff. It was cute for a while. It was a business story for a while, and it feels like it's run its course. And at least in the intrigue department, now it's just like, okay, what's gonna happen? Figure it out, and we'll decide if we're gonna watch. That's the fans' perspective, I think.
I thought the numbers were pretty good for series one, though, Jeff, weren't they?
I don't know how to read those Netflix numbers. It was way down. It's amazing how many shows they have. Then again, I've just added about 8 things to my watch list based on year in review, best in TV stuff, and I follow the entertainment business pretty somewhat closely. I never heard of some of these shows that these people are putting on their lists. And I'm like, and that's been on Netflix, or this is Drops of Gold's been on Apple TV in April. And all these things are just like, wow. It's just, there's so much. And I don't know. I think it's going to be tough. Even Hard Knocks on HBO feels a little tired now. And and that's one that really started this whole thing. And it's a great concept, but it just feels like, it's time for, I mean, you and I have watched some sports docs that are not these types of shows, and they're so much more rewarding. They just feel a little less contrived. And I think that's where that's why ultimately these things are going to hit a wall, is it just feels a little bit contrived.
Well, unless they really push the boat out in series two and really get quite gritty. Again, I've actually tuned into because I like the coach, the in-season series of Hard Knocks, uh-huh, from Miami Dolphins. I find their coach, is it McDaniel? Quite an interesting guy. He's a young guy coaching an NFL team. It's just like, he's like some kind of nerd. That's been a really good series. So go on. Well, I'm just going to say
I was going to say, to your point, last year, for instance, we discussed it. They should have been, when they got renewed last year, the focus should have been on the Ryder Cup. The build up to the Ryder Cup, And even if they didn't get access to the team room, that's not the end of the world. They could have done the whole story. And because we know that's where the drama is. And then the stuff that they could have shared after, you know, for instance, the USGA highlight film on the US Open, they really went, they didn't just show highlights. They went and got Wyndham Clark. They sat down with his dad. They sat down with other people. They had all this great inside the ropes footage that had never been seen with audio. Of course, it got no promotion. It was fantastic. And so it shows you that if you, and of course you need the event to be good, and you know, that's the risk you take. But I would love to watch that Netflix 5-6 episode arc of the Ryder Cup before, during, and after, still right now. And that's, and I'm, you know, I'm pretty tough. I'm pretty picky on that stuff. And they didn't. They just want to do these player fluff pieces that are basically like this week on the PGA Tour was swearing. And that just doesn't, I just don't see that having much appeal or being something that gives them that many new fans.
The another prediction for 2024 will the President's Cup, Royal Montreal, is that, I think?
Yeah.
Last one, Jeff, given there'll be a brand new world in 2025.
I do.
And will you be sad to see the President's Cup go if indeed you think it's going to go?
Well, I don't think it's going to go away. I think this will be the last one as we know it with the U.S. versus the international. Obviously, the dream scenario would be that Interim Commissioner Woods says, you know, this idea of bringing the women in is a great idea. And Yasir says, I agree. And it's going to be the Aramco President's Cup. God, that's bleak. But I the dream scenario would be the men and women in a mixed international event. I think the more likely scenario is some sort of boondoggle that is a little like the format of the recent Champions Cup, where they try to get an international, a European, and a U.S. team, and they overthink it and they do something that's I somewhat good intentions, I guess, being more international. And they muck it up. But I do think the U.S. men versus the international men this year will be I'm going to predict it will be the last in that format. I don't think the President's Cup's going away.
I think a mixed event would be awesome. I think that would be
Who doesn't? And that's what's so pitiful is it just like who doesn't think that would be it would be different than the Ryder Cup and you just know the makeups of the teams would be perfect. Like it's just teed up for it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the problem is, but there you go. And the Grant Thornton this year was excellent. They got a nice turnout and it showed and the Olympic. And by the way, we haven't even mentioned it's an Olympic year coming up. Does anybody care about the Olympics? No, the answer is no. This will be the last form or the last year of the Olympics in the stroke play format, by the way. I am predicting that, but that's based on the rumor mill that they are definitely trying to have some form of team element when it comes to Riviera in 2028, when again nobody will care here in Los Angeles. Frankly, I'd rather go watch the beach volleyball than the golf. So,
there you go.
And I don't think I'll be alone in that assessment.
What was I going to say? The golf national as well. That's a terrible. I mean, given what you could have gone played at Chantier or Morfontaine.
I know.
You could have played, you know. I guess to get more people, you'll be able to fit more people in it.
There won't be anybody there. Paris, same thing. Yeah. What are you going to do? You're going to go into the city and see, competitions near the City of Light, or are you going to go out to Versailles and watch a stroke play event? At least they won't have the rough up like they did for the Ryder Cup, I don't think. So there's that.
I think that may be the one prediction you get right. Not you, that we get right, Jeff. This will be the last of the President's Cup in its current format. That's going to change. I'd forgotten about golf at the Olympics. My goodness, that is incredible. Actually, a couple more things, Jeff, and this has been going on for ages. Any rules, equipment predictions for 2024? What have you got?
I think the driver will be expedited after the response to all the bitching about the golf ball rollback, that the governing bodies will begin the process of either a local rule for the driver or also a rollback. I mean, I think the most underreported story, myself included, on the distance news was that new little bit of change in the way they test drivers. They gave him the notice on starting in March that if your driver tests with a certain number close to the edge, you need to send 8 more or whatever the number was. And yeah, we're going to look at those too. I mean, that blew my mind. I didn't realize they only submit one club for testing. And I thought what they were saying was, we're tired of you taking these up to the edge and then having them go over the edge. And yeah, they test out on the tour. And we saw last year, Rory took his driver out of play because he knew it was getting close to the edge. But I think they've gotten enough feedback, and Martin Slummer's comments at the Open this year in response to my question actually was, I think that combination of where they were and then the response they got from players on this saying, you know, the driver is just too forgiving, that we're going to see them expedite it. I don't know what that means, when that will end up happening. And then my other rules prediction is that I have two others. They're going to outlaw a player signaling with five fingers that you're hitting, that they hit a five iron. And they're going to call that the Koepka rule. And then we're going to say goodbye to penalty area, and we're going to welcome the word hazard back. I have no inside information, but I am thinking about launching a campaign on that front, because nobody likes to say penalty area. It's painful. It's just painful. Hazard would be a great word, wouldn't it?
There you go. The the signaling thing, that is already a breach of the rules of golf.
Oh, yes, is it? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because it felt like it was so long ago.
Maybe there will be
a
braver
breach of the rules. Yes.
Maybe there'll be a braver rules officials. We'll call it the Paramore paradigm.
He got called in twice on that one.
I'm surprised you would say. I wonder how the manufacturers would respond to any move on the driver. I mean, leaving Titleist to one side or Acushnet to one side, and the other ones would probably frame their response as, okay, we've been pretty mature and adult about this. We've agreed to cooperate with the RNA and the USGA, but my goodness, here we are. It's 9 months later, and you're coming after our drivers. Hang on a second, that's not a good faith response from the governing bodies. We're having nothing to do with that. Oh, and by the way, we're going to start dragging our feet on the ball stuff. You don't foresee that at all?
Oh, of course they'll complain and whine and throw a hissy fit. That's what they're bound to do. But I think they've already given them notice, and they're going to give them time to offer a solution as to how to do this. And it just is the same problem as the ball. They're addicted to selling the public what the pros play. And so we're just going to have that same argument. But I just, how do you not roll out all the quotes from the players that eloquently stated the driver's just too forgiving, and Bryson DeChambeau essentially giving away that, you know, he can hit it anywhere on the face and get away with it. They just have too much now to, and they just are tired. I think they're tired of these companies not playing fair with what they put in the hands of the players and how close to the edge they're testing. And they gave him a pass by dropping the driver from this process. And they've got the backing, I think, of enough people to revisit it. And how they execute it, I don't know. And when, I just, you know, I can't believe we're still waiting till 2028 on the ball, but there you go. And we're, by the way, we're up to the, it's up to the manufacturers, Lawrence, to tell us which of the balls currently on the list would conform under the new testing. So good luck finding out which those are, because they will not tell us.
Just one more thing, Jeff. I've got a prediction for the women's game. I think that the PIF, the Saudis, will buy the LET, the Ladies European Tour, from a strictly, if you're looking at, as an investor, if you're looking for a growth opportunities in a turbulent marketplace, if the men are becoming less popular, that there's an audience looking for an alternative. I think that they might flock, or not flock is probably the wrong word, but they might look towards the women's game. If you look at what's happening in women's soccer, it is I think men's soccer is basically saturated now. I think it's and it's becoming extremely expensive, even for nation states. I mean, you look at Todd Boehly, your pal, your Dodgers owner, who's taken over Chelsea. I think he's already sunk in $5 to $6 billion. So the money, certainly the expansion franchises in women's soccer in the United States are springing up everywhere. I think you might see something, a bit of a flood, not a flood, but there'll be a shift of money towards women's golf, and it'll start. I mean, if I'm the Saudis, I mean, from simply a whitewashing of our national reputation, investing heavily in the women's game makes complete sense. So they're already in the women's game. The women's game is poised itself for expansion and growth. It's a no-brainer to me. I think that will definitely happen. And if that happens, then the LPG Tour has a problem on its hands, I think.
I think it's a great prediction, and I completely agree with it. And I do think by the end of next year, you will already have them owning the LET, and the LPGA Tour will be in negotiations with them. And the franchise model, the whole thing works with the women as well. And it makes sense. It's interesting that people are less offended by that idea for the women than they are the men, which I think tells you that sport washing, one, it works, and number two, that people would like to see the women compensated better for the amount of travel they do around the world compared to the men, with a lot less whining than the men. So I think you're spot on. I mean, by the way, what do you make of all these stories where they're showing 100, they're counting the number of people in a stadium watching these players they signed for silly money in Saudi Arabia? How is that good for them, or do they just not care?
It's a very interesting question. Just to fill people in, if you haven't seen it, the Saudi Pro League, Soccer League, the attendance figures are just quite astonishing at some of the games, certainly given the amount of money invested. 220 people watching Ronaldo. I don't think it's Ronaldo's team is getting 220 people. There's some very good, well-compensated European players are playing in stadiums in Saudi Arabia, in front of 150, 200 people. It's quite astonishing. I'm guessing the whole drive is towards the 2034 World Cup, which is there's only one bidder for that, and it's Saudi Arabia. Again, they see it, they don't see it in terms, I can't speak for Yasser, but they don't see it in terms of 5, 10, 15 years. They're looking at it in terms of 20, 40, 60, 80, 100 years. So a few embarrassing headlines at this stage, you know, I think they can live with that. But it is quite astonishing the level of their tolerance for you look at it with live golf. There is nobody, obviously, with Adelaide accepted in a couple of events.
Well,
a smaller scale elsewhere in the world. Sorry, go on.
Well, they've generally been, Liv's been better attended, but we know that a lot of those the tickets were just given away. I mean, they were not, but they've at least had people show up. And as you say, Adelaide was extremely well attended, it's just such a weird look, and I realize they're not trying to generate revenue off ticket sales, but here's one thing I do know, Lawrence: the Dodgers are going to cross 4 million in attendance this year with Yamamoto-san and Otani-san. Well, they were 3.8 this year, but although the prices are just absurd, but they actually do have, there is a model for paying for these ridiculous salaries in their universe. Yeah, I just really brought that up just because I just wanted to bring up the Dodgers signing those two players.
Two players for, what was it, $1.1 billion salary?
No, three players. They've committed to three guys for just over $1 billion, yeah.
Again, in terms of the LET, it's an absolute no-brainer. The bargain of, I wouldn't say it's a bargain of a century, but if I'm Yasser, I would look at the women's game and buying that part of the women's game as an absolute brilliant investment with huge growth potential, especially given the backdrop of what's going on in the men's game. It's ironic that Yasser is, mucking up muddying up the men's game, and the women's game could benefit from that, and he would benefit in both sizes. He's quite a character.
Yeah, it's still got to be more than money, though, Lawrence. They've got to develop stars. They've got to have a vision to the schedule. And we have not mentioned that Lilia Vu won two majors this year, which was kind of a underreported story in the game. But there still has to be, there's just still too much parity. I think the women's game is a little bit ahead of the men right now on the parity front, and it's not good. And it's a product of the equipment. It's a product of the money. It's a product of the schedules being flooded. And I don't have all the answers, but I do think parity is a huge problem for both men's and women's golf.
The women's game really does need a superstar. And right now I don't see who that is, but I don't follow the women's game closely.
We thought Lydia Ko was about to make a comeback and gets the number one, and then she just totally disappears this year.
I love
nuts, wild.
My favorite golfer of the year, well, certainly top three, was Alison Kerpoos. I just love the way she plays golf. I love how she won. Her performance at Pebble in the back nine. I went to follow her at the Women's Open at Walton Heath. I just love her. I mean, but she's not a charismatic figure. I'm sorry. I don't think I'm offending anybody if I say that. She's a great player. But anyway, that's my prediction. Long overdue. Any other business, Jeff, or have we kind of run?
No, I think we've just about covered most of the ones that I was thinking of.
Yeah, I want to ask you, do you think 24, we're talking about the PGA Tour University and all these great amateurs. Is this the year we see an amateur winning in one of the major tours? I was looking at the top 10 in the world amateur rankings and just this morning and wondering
who you got.
Any of these guys can do it. Well, Crystal Lamprecht played. He made the cut in South Africa recently, but not with any great distinction. He's number two in the world. Sargent finished 38th at the U.S. Open, and that's pretty good. The one I thought might be now one, David Ford, the kid at North Carolina, very dynamic player. I think he was the one, or might have been his brother, shot 61 at Seminole in some college event earlier in the year, somebody like that. But I thought, yes. This is going to happen, but then when you actually go through the players at the top of the amateur game and see how they've actually performed in pro events, nobody's really, really come that close. So probably not.
I think it's possible because you're going to have the European Tour weekend even more. And then you're going to have a lot of PGA Tour events with these signature events that are not great fields, and that there could be a week where one of those players gets an exemption or qualifies and does it. I think it's a long shot, but I do believe the recipe is there for at least on those. I don't see one of the signature events or a major. I don't think it's going to happen, but I do think you have a lot of lesser events around the world that are still good fields or decent enough and good players. But I'm looking at the list too. It's interesting. I don't see Gordon Sargent staying pro that much longer. I know there was some question on whether he would play the spring, but have you heard anything?
I think he's playing the spring. He's actually doing a pretty serious degree at Vanderbilt as well. I wonder if he might. I think he might. I'm not sure.
Try to graduate.
He might leave. Well, I think he's doing an economics degree, and I think a pretty good, solid, realistic family, But I mean, it would be hard. I mean, he's got his PGA Tour card. If he plays through the spring, wins a national championship again as an individual, and then go, that would make most sense. Other than that, actually, my prediction is it's not for 2024. 2025, an amateur will win on the PGA Tour, and his name is going to be Jackson Koivun. He's a freshman at Auburn. He's going to be world number one in a very short space of time. Unbelievable player.
I think your prediction is... I think there's a better chance of it happening in the women's side, that somebody like Ingrid Lindblad, Rachel Keane, there's a couple of women I could see contending in a women's big women's event. But Sargent's an interesting one. He could play some stuff this year and break through as an amateur, but we'll see. I mean, he's got a busy schedule between school, Vanderbilt. I can't see how many events he would take a sponsor's invite for here in the early part of the year before he turns pro. So it's an interesting one, though. There's no question it would be exciting, though.
Yeah,
it was exciting with Lambrecht at the Open just in the first day. It was fun to see.
Yeah, it was fun. It was he's quite a player, that boy. I'm not sure he's going to, maybe he just hits it too far. I mean, he hits it too
Too
far. I
wild, you mean?
can't hit it too. It's just too his dispersion is just crazy,
Yeah,
and you can get away with that, and at Hillside, but I'm not sure you can get away with it at a PGA Tour set up and golf course. Anyway, leave it at that, Jeff. We've gone on for hours and hours and
yeah.
hours. Anyway, good to talk to you. We will be back in 2024. I predict that with a fair amount of certainty. Anyway, good to talk to you, Jeff. We
Yep.
will talk again soon.
Thanks, Lawrence.